appreciate all of you coming out tonight to discuss the case of Bradley Manning. And want to introduce the panelists here, starting from my right, my further right, I guess, Finn Fair's weekly radio program. To his right, Kevin Gascola, a writer-journalist for Fire Dog Lake. Kevin has regularly covered court-martial of Bradley Manning and is co-author with Greg Mitchell of Truth and Consequence, the U.S. versus Bradley Manning. To Kevin's right, Brigitta Jones' daughter. She is an Icelandic MP and a WikiLeaks activist. And this is Brigitta's first visit to the U.S. since she helped produce the collateral murder video. And finally, Alexa O'Brien, an independent journalist. Alexa's work has been essential to anyone interested in the Bradley Manning case. Alexa has compiled the most complete record of the Bradley Manning proceedings anywhere, and they can be found on her blog, alexaobrien.com. Okay, I want to start with Brigitta. We just saw a very powerful short film entitled Providence, based on both the collateral murder video and the statement that was surreptitiously recorded, Bradley Manning, when he spoke in court proceedings a couple of weeks ago. First, just tell us why you decided to get involved in producing this video, and did it have the impact that you had hoped at the time?
I saw this video in February, and I just saw now when his statement that he leaked it to WikiLeaks in the same month. When I watched it, actually Julian Assange showed it to me in a cafe right opposite to the parliament. I was deeply moved. I was one of many millions of people in the world that tried to stop this war. We nearly did. And I, when I saw it, I just felt it was my duty somehow to help make it available to the general public, because I might be a naivist, but I believed that it could actually prevent us from waging more wars and hopefully end the Iraq war. And then when I listened to Bradley Manning's statement, it was another one of these moments where you're deeply moved. And it's been a little bit uneasy for many of his supporters. You know, one doesn't want to give him credit for something if he hasn't decided or, you know, claimed that he was responsible. So when he decided to plead guilty for the 10 counts, I think that should be encouragement for us to really step up the fight for Bradley Manning, because now there is this uneasiness about, you know, making it worse for him, gone. So I think his message, his statement is so powerful, because, you know, it feels to me, and I was just talking to Kevin about it this morning, is that it feels to me that he is not broken, and that is extraordinary. It just shows what an extraordinary person he is. And I truly think that one of the reasons he's not broken is because he knows of all of us out here that are fighting for him, to actually also showing this video, and even if it's banned, for many people in the United States to see any WikiLeaks material. So the impact has been, you know, as much as I expected. His treatment is way worse than I expected.
And, we're going to, of course, get into his treatment and where we are in the case. But before we do, I want to just go to Peter, because what Bradley Manning has now taken responsibility for is the passing on of that video and thousands of diplomatic cables and Iraq and Afghanistan war logs. And I just want to go to Peter to talk about how, at the time of these leaks, these documents were received by the general public and, of course, the media. And there are really two sets of media in terms of the way they were received. One is literally, and they did a lot of the publishing, and then by the broader media, and also, I guess, the establishment in this country, there was a lot of ambivalence, I guess, in some respect.
Yeah, we went through a couple of phases, the video being obviously the first one, and if you go back and see how that was treated, it mostly wasn't a story. This wasn't a WikiLeaks project where, as Sam was alluding to, there were co-publishers, so the New York Times got it and they could go over it. This was one that was open for anyone to take, and very few outlets did, even though it's enormously grisly, violent, all of these things. It has all these qualities that television news says it looks for. They avoided this story, and one of the most telling, I think, was CNN. They decided not to show any of the footage of the Reuters employees being shot. And the reporter at CNN said they made this decision out of respect for the families of those reporters. We don't want them to suffer further trauma. The reason this is especially galling is that the father of one of those journalists who was killed that day cheered the release of the video. He said he would sell his house for the world to see what happened to his son. And someone at CNN to say, we will not show this to the world out of respect for that family, is insulting and offensive. But that's exactly the kind of approach the media took with this first videotape. Subsequent to that, you saw, as Sam was alluding to, unusual reactions. I think for many of the WikiLeaks cables, the State Department cables, the reaction was, there's no news in here. There's nothing here that paints the United States in an unflattering light. In fact, if you read the cables, our diplomats behave themselves quite judiciously and quite fairly. It paints a flattering light. Julian Assange was wrong about that. This was the kind of official reaction, because it had to be. Because if you dug into the cables and you read the cables about knowing what was going on, a coup against a democratically elected president in Honduras, the U.S. State Department knew about that, but portrayed a different reality publicly. The efforts to stymie investigations into CIA torture, pressure put on lesser powerful countries when it came to climate change policy at some of the international conferences, that's what's in the cables. The media wanted you to believe that there was nothing in there, and what was in there made the United States look good. And I think that was one of the most obscene results of what we saw in how the press treated this enormously valuable information that was handed to them. And what did they do with it? They said, well, there's nothing here, or if there is anything here, it's of little to no importance.
And then, of course, subsequently went on to cite those cables in story after story after story for consistently to this day. Across the world. And we're going to talk also about the virtual media blackout in many respects of the ongoing case up to this point. But before we do, Kevin, you and Alexa are really two of three or four people really in the world who have consistently followed pre-trial or the pre-court-martial hearings. And before we discuss sort of the stunning quality of the lack of any of your colleagues joining you, first, just for those people who may not know the entire sort of timeline of what Bradley Manning has gone through up to this point, just if you could give us just a bit of a brief background, so that we can all be on the same page as we start to talk about the case and the way that it's being covered in this country. All right, Alexa, would you mind recounting sort of just how we got to where we got a couple of months ago? Well, let's start, I guess, shortly after the release of these materials.
Bradley Manning was detained in late May 2010 at Fadhammer, Iraq. He was then transferred to Camp Arjathan, Kuwait, where he was there for about a month. He arrived at Quantico, Marine Corps Base Quantico Brig, on July 29th, 2010. And what's interesting is the press release from the military said that he was sent to Quantico because of the complexity of the charges and the fact that they expected that he would be in pretrial confinement for a long time. So when we compare that to the statements by military officials sort of insinuating that they were surprised that he was kept there for a long time, that was the intent from the beginning. That he was going to be kept at this rundown brig at Quantico. Manning was there for 9 months. It was the subject of his Article 13 motion that we heard in late November and early December concerning his unlawful pretrial confinement. That ruling is on my site if anybody wants to read it, including journalists. The judge did find that he was illegally held. His investigation is the largest, in conjunction with the federal investigation of WikiLeaks, is the largest investigation likely in U.S. history. It is massive. And having looked at it and investigated it probably closer than most, it encompasses almost every law enforcement agency. It's a joint partnership between the Department of Defense, the Department of State, as well as the Department of Justice. Just to bring you know, we had an Article 32 pretrial hearing in December 2011. So that's sort of like a grand jury in the military regime. And he has been in pretrial confinement for more than 1,000 days.
And maybe I'm asking you to speculate here, but why do you believe that the military anticipated his case to be so long and so complicated that they needed to bring him to Quantico?
You know, in the words of his defense attorney from legal filings and statements in court, and I paraphrase, the treatment of Bradley Manning is directly intended to plea him out. You know, the government has invested a lot of money and a lot of hype into this investigation. We now have a National Security Staff Insider Threat Group headed by Holder and Clapper. Clapper is the Director of National Intelligence, a direct result of this leak. And there have been massive engines within the U.S. government. So the U.S. government is unlikely to back down. I mean, even look at their posture after this plea to 9 lesser included offenses of the Espionage Act and then one violation of lawful regulation with a substituted time frame. They're going forward with the whole case, all 22 charges.
And, Kevin, give me your sense of what your sense is why, where is the value for the government in that? I mean, is your sense that this was their agenda from the beginning? Or, I mean, there's been a lot of speculation that there was an attempt to leverage Bradley Manning in an attempt to go after WikiLeaks and Julian Assange in particular. It's unclear at this point what the status of that investigation is, though it appears to be ongoing. Do you think that's still sort of the game plan? Do you think that ever was? Give me your sense.
I'm speculating and giving my best analysis based on what I've seen in the courtroom, but if I have to make presumptions, I would say that the intention is to prosecute, try, and convict Manning of as many charges as possible to make the largest example out of him as they can, and then to use that conviction to then proceed to go onward and after staff members and Julian Assange, the head of WikiLeaks, and to get people who are associates and to maybe even go after others who were involved in the release of this information, if it is possible. Now, as the years have gone on, I would speculate that what is ideal to these prosecutors gets out of hand and becomes more of an impossibility just because that crime that they think was committed in their mind happened years ago. So it becomes more difficult for them to pursue it idealistically. But I do believe that Manning is, in a way, a stepping stone, and that what they're doing with him in being innovative in pressing the aiding the enemy charge, this most severe an egregious charge, this capital offense that any person can be found guilty of, even if they're not in the military, and the way that they are being innovative about pursuing it and arguing it, which I think we'll get into more detail here as the panel goes on tonight, I think is an example of how they are trying to make an example out of him and then use this sort of conviction to go after other people, whether they be in the military or perhaps government employees.
Alexa, let's talk about that now. Let's talk about what Bradley Manning did plead guilty to, and what he did not plead guilty to two weeks ago.
I want to say something first. The U.S. investigation of WikiLeaks and Julian Assange is ongoing, and the grand jury is ongoing. I had an exchange with Peter Carr at the U.S. Attorney's Office for Eastern Virginia, which is responsible for the grand jury. I had actually approached Andrew Peterson, who's in the Twitter 2702D. He's one of the U.S. attorneys, assistant U.S. attorneys in the case with Brigitte. And then also I approached Lindsay Kelly, who is in the appeal. And I had left a message on Andrew Peterson's voicemail and then actually had a exchange verbally on the phone with Lindsay Kelly. And Peter Carr, the spokesperson for that office, confirmed that the investigation is ongoing. In terms of the charges, what Manning didn't plead guilty to is very, very important. Manning did not plead guilty to Specification 11 of Charge 2, which relates to the Guarani video. The government charged a November 1 timeframe, start date, which dovetails with the 2703D orders and the other Google, Sonic, Dynadot, all the other secret orders, as well as the timeline of essentially the grand jury. If you look at the testimony of Special Agent Mark Mander in the Article 32, which is posted on my website, he talks about the fact that seven civilians were under investigation by the FBI for wrongdoing, criminal behavior. I mean, they're not very exact in that language. And it was being led by the FBI. And the Guarani video, all the details that came about this individual named Jason Katz, who worked at Brookhaven National Laboratory, and allegedly, according to a confidential informant for the government, Adrian Lamo, as well as the testimony of these agents, he was allegedly, according to the government, trying to decrypt this video for WikiLeaks. The government asserted in the pretrial that this video that Manning had a conspiracy here. However, if you look at the time frame also when the government's asserting this video was on Mr. Katz's computer, allegedly, it's December 15th. Two things, and then I'll be done. Number one is, fundamentally, the computer did not match the one found on Manning's computer. So forensically, they didn't match. And secondly, in order to bolster their prosecution of Manning in conspiracy and then dovetail it into the grand jury, they want to allege that Manning was leaking from November 1st onward, because what does it do? It completely destroys any whistleblower defense. It shows a kind of culpability to conspiracy. So this is very, very important that he did not plead guilty to that. In fact, he pled possibly during, there's this normal process in the pretrial where the accused has to come to court and say, we might plead to this and might plead to that, so that the court can sort of be aware of whether it's a proper plea, if it's really a lesser included offense to the one that's charged and all that kind of stuff. And defense said in court and then also in an earlier legal filing that Manning would possibly plead to an April transmission of the Guarani video, but he wouldn't plead to a November transmission. And the government came back and said, well, we have evidence for both. We just decided not to charge it. And so Manning didn't plead to that charge.
So, I mean, just to be clear, the general point is that there are theoretically protections for whistleblowers as opposed to people who are simply attempting to aid the enemy in some fashion. This is probably a good time to talk about, Kevin, give me your assessment in terms of, and please, anybody feel free to chime in here, but we've just completed the pretrial hearings, and so this is important stuff as we move into June. Give me your sense as to whether or not what Bradley Manning did constitutes whistleblowing, because we are living in a fairly unprecedented era of attacks on whistleblowers by the Obama administration, and the attempts to use the Espionage Act to punish whistleblowers. Give me your sense where Bradley Manning fits in that larger context.
Well, I happen to believe that, based off his statement, it's fairly easy to make an argument that Bradley Manning is a classic whistleblower. And I believe, from what I've read, and from being in the courtroom or media center to hear Bradley Manning actually read that statement, that what he was rationalizing in his version of events that he participated in, and he's entering this into the courtroom under oath, I believe everything in that statement and in the leaked audio that people are able to hear now, that reflects that this person is a classic whistleblower. And I say that because there's this, and Peter can get into it a little bit of how the media has covered this, but there's this general idea that there was a document dump, and that's how the media refers to it. But when you listen to Bradley talk about the information set by set, particularly we'll zero in on the collateral murder video because we're here on the anniversary of that release. And when you listen to him talk about that video and the choices and decision making that went into deciding to release it, what you have to understand is there's much more beyond just having access to this information. There's a research process. There's finding out that Reuters, in fact, had a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit, and U.S. Central Command was denying them the video of their own employees being killed in theater of war. And Bradley himself is sitting there thinking that he has the ability to right a wrong and give a copy of this video, an authentic copy, to Reuters so that they can have the truth, so that they can know. Beyond that, he also looks into a book by David Finkel, who is a Washington Post reporter and has written a book called The Good Soldiers. And inside this book, he finds that it has a verbatim transcript of the video. Now, that suggests that someone inside the Pentagon, or you know, more generally maybe, they would have given the reporter here access so that he could see the video, so that he could do his own reporting, so that he could benefit from it and publish it in a book. And so Bradley himself decides that this is wrong, not only because it's in this book and Reuters has been deprived of access, but also because he disagrees with the interpretation that David Finkel has published. He believes that David Finkel is not actually representing the barbarity of the collateral murder incident that he himself has witnessed inside the intelligence facility. And so Bradley decides that he's going to provide the video to WikiLeaks. And that to me represents an actual whistleblowing act. It's not, I have access to this information, look at the power I have, I'm going to release it, and then I'm going to watch with glee as it's being reported in the media and I'm getting attention for an act that I engaged in. It's believing that there's something that needs to be done about this information. And we can talk into more detail, but I want to let others jump in.
Well, I think it's important, it's unambiguous that Bradley Manning is a whistleblower. It's important how we define and how the popular culture defines WikiLeaks. If we understand Manning as a whistleblower, we have to, I think at the same time, understand WikiLeaks as a journalistic enterprise, as a media outlet. That affords them legal protections in the United States that they wouldn't have if they were designated otherwise. So it's important for people who are interested in the free flow of information to say WikiLeaks is a group of journalists publishing information, and they are entitled to protection, and they should be protected by people who care about the First Amendment.
And let me just add, in the context of the case, the government has, at least in the context of Bradley Manning's actions, stipulated that had Bradley Manning successfully provided this information to the New York Times or to the Washington Post, as far as the government's concerned, the charges would be the same. I mean, is that?
They also added to that Overgaard, Captain Overgaard of the military prosecution, that they're calling a witness on the merits, so the trial related to the proving the charges. They're calling a witness on sentencing and possibly on the merits to characterize the WikiLeaks organization. And if you look at the 1030A1 charges, the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act...
I'm sorry, can you be more clear? What does that mean? They're pulling the witness? Is that...
They're calling a witness, an expert, to testify as to the nature of the WikiLeaks organization on sentencing and then possibly on the merits.
I wonder if that's somebody from WikiLeaks.
Yeah, do we know who that witness is? I mean, do we have a sense of who that
witness,
is?
Well, it's a government witness, so I doubt that.
Because
that would probably be the best people to ask us what sort of organization it is.
I would imagine they would not be. It would not be someone from WikiLeaks. Although, there was a Yoki Benkler wrote a piece in the New York Times. A Yale law professor who I believe was going to be a witness for the defense.
Yes.
Speaking that at the very least in 2010 there was no reason for Bradley Manning to perceive WikiLeaks as any different in terms of its status as a media than they would the Huffington Post or the New York Times.
What's really important in terms of the charges against Manning about the characterization of WikiLeaks by the government is the more they make WikiLeaks not look like a press organization, however they characterize it, it goes right to the wanton aspect of causing to be published in intelligence belonging to the United States, and also just the nature of the character of the elements of his charges.
And I want to get back to Peter, where you're going with this, but will the defense, in the course of the court-martial, need to prove, to substantiate Bradley Manning's claims that he had given it at first to other media outlets? Because that seems to, would undercut, it seems, the theory that he was attempting to disseminate this information to a place that had sort of some other nefarious motivations. Will they have to establish that? Is there substantiation of Bradley Manning's attempts?
His statement in terms of the legal standing of a statement, and this came up in the pretrial because, you know, the judge was reluctant to have it, it not being used against him in the merits because it's the Providence inquiry where he's pleading and he's going to plead to a stipulation, it says facts of what he did. Essentially, no. Then the defense might introduce that, you know, in their case, whether it's their sentencing case, in terms of the severity of what he should get for those charges because he pled guilty to them. But the statement in and of itself was testimony, but it wasn't. I'm repeating myself. It can't be used against him accordingly in the merits.
Yeah, outside the courtroom, how we talk about WikiLeaks is important and how other journalists talk about Julian Assange and WikiLeaks is important. At the beginning of this, as the Afghan war logs were released, Joe Klein from Time magazine said, if a single foreign national is rounded up and put in jail because of a leaked cable, this entire anarchic exercise in freedom stands as a human disaster. Assange is a criminal. He's the one who should be in jail. Bob Garfield from NPR's On the Media, all of this has made me wonder whether WikiLeaks is a legitimate whistleblower or just a looter Has Julian Assange shed light here with the release of 253,000 cables, or has he just smashed a very big store window? That is the presentation of WikiLeaks and Julian Assange that I think elite media and elite politicians want to present, because if you take them out of that journalistic context and turn them into vandals, into looters, it makes it much easier to demonize the entire project. My favorite was Jamie Rubin, a former Clinton State Department diplomat, who said, "We don't know why Julian Assange is doing this. His position is to promote world peace, and that's just what the State Department is set up to do, so we don't understand Assange's point."
Brigida, do you want
to? Yeah, I just want to add to this, because one of the things that's been really surprising to me coming from outside the United States is the fact that the media here does not seem to be aware of how dangerous it is, what's happening, that the line is completely blurred. And so when are they going to be next? And it just seems to be, like from what I've been hearing from Alexia and Kevin recently, that this line, it's crossing over the line, and yet the media is just sitting like sitting ducks. And for me, I just don't understand it. How can they be so ignorant? I mean, from at least when I started to volunteer for WikiLeaks, I didn't see any difference from them being and me being a part of an organization that was had exactly the same infrastructure as a media. And when we were producing the Collateral Murder video, we did it like any other video in production. You know, fact-finding, it was just like a documentary that was already there, but you had to find all the facts about it. And I think it is very important that so we sort of know a lot of the facts about what's wrong. What we need to think about is how we're going to stop reacting and do something about it. I think that's very important. That is one of the reasons I came here, and I wanted to have a discussion about Bradley Manning, is that we need to think what can we do for him, even if I think it is very important that we discuss how it's being built up. I would really like for us also to talk about what can we do about it, and what can all these people that are here tonight and listening and so forth do about it. I think I think one of the problems in the United States is that you build so much on fear, you know, and you're constantly reacting to this fear, and you're paralyzed, and you feel like there's nothing you can do. And if there is any person for me that proved that wrong, was Bradley Manning. Just look at the impact of what this guy has in Mexico. So, and I just want to draw a focus on to that, so we're not too technical about the case, because personally I find it to be very boring. you know, not too technical. I'm sorry if I'm... I do this all the time. I'm a complete control freak.
I noticed.
Yeah, it's fine. I admit to this fault. And... no, seriously, I really want us to leave this room feeling empowered to do stuff for WikiLeaks. The reason why, for Bradley Manning, the reason why he went out of Quantico was because of direct action. You know, and if there are any people, you know, either online watching this or in this room that participate in facilitating the release of Bradley Manning out of Quantico, I just want to say I'm deeply thankful. Because it was so difficult to be outside, completely outside, and witnessing how this young man was tortured for bringing us what should really remain in the public domain. So I later on, I would like to explain a project that is one of the reasons I'm here, that I want us to do in June when the trial starts. So just later on. Sorry for...
I think this is an important point. I mean, because I'm curious that let's start with Alexa. Is the central issue, is Bradley Manning representative of something that is a larger problem in society? And when people are attempting to support Bradley Manning, to secure his release or to secure some measure of reason from the government. To what effect? Is this an issue of whistleblowers? Is this an issue of information freedom? Is this an issue of media? Is it government overreach? What is it ultimately for you, Alexa?
I mean, one of the most important aspects of this trial is it is a joining together of all those issues. This is, the press is on trial at Fort Meade, and I say that in the press pool. When they ask, you know, why aren't there transcripts? Or they're sleeping and snoring during sessions. The U.S. press is on trial, number one. The war on terror is on trial because you have to look at the breakdown in the military intelligence corps that led to, you know, the breakdown within the SCIF. And then overclassification is another issue. This case is so important. You know, I wanted to speak to something Brigitte said. What's so inspiring about Bradley Manning, too, is it shows you the power of the individual actor. We keep hearing about asymmetric threats and threats and threats, but there's asymmetric opportunities, and Bradley Manning is one of those. And I feel personally that it's, you know, even in the act of doing transcripts, like I knew that this trial was going to be secret, and I decided I wanted to know what was going on, and just doing it, and it has an effect. And I think that's the hope of this, is how powerful this young man is. I want to say something about Bradley Manning, too, that never gets covered. This kid is actually very respectful of the military. You know, he pled to service discrediting and prejudice to good order and discipline. That's the lesser included offense of the espionage charge. He's only spoken highly of his current chain of command directly to him. He is not some kind of, he's incredibly respectful.
And then Kevin, I mean, for you, the broader picture.
Well, the broader picture for me, and I said a little bit about this when I was talking to you the other day. For me, I just look at the incredible lawlessness in this country, the kind of impunity that our government officials have when they commit crimes. I'm not even going to limit it to war crimes. I'll say any major federal crime or any sort of crime that you and I are going to be deeply impacted or others in the world are going to be impacted, and so much that their human rights are violated or someone is going to experience great harm. And I would say that when I look at this case, I think about the choices that the Justice Department makes for whistleblowers, alleged leakers, activists, dissidents, and I think about what the military is doing with this soldier to not only make an example out of him, but to also clamp down and reassert control, beginning to track every single soldier in the military's keystroke on their computer so that they can be very clear and well aware of what they are doing at their console or at their computer. And I just, in my mind, I wonder, as we think about this as a choice, because I think there is a choice here. The military does not have to go forward and have a trial of Bradley Manning. That is something we all have to realize here tonight. And whether we recognize it or not, his defense has given the military an out. And if there is any sliver of humanity in the Pentagon at all, this is an opportunity for them to say, well, it's enough. You're going to put him in jail no matter what. The judge made it clear that there's no scenario under military law where he can plead not guilty. So he's going to be found guilty of something, which means that he's going to go to jail for some time. We just do not know how long that is going to be. So that brings me back to this choice. The fact that the military would prosecute him, but yet people who are involved in Haditha massacring Iraqi civilians would not be given longer amounts of time in prison. Or you could have soldiers who pose with Nazi SSS flags, and you have people who are urinating on corpses, and they aren't given the sort of attention that Bradley Manning has been given for something that really didn't do any harm, really, in my opinion, isn't even on the level of obsceneness of what other soldiers have done in this war, of whether it would be raping women in war, committing acts of torture. And I mean, there's so much that I can go down the list here and talk about what the former Bush administration officials were able to get away with. I mean, we're sitting here a month after the 10th anniversary of engineering a war, of making certain that no matter what, during Bush's term, we went to war. I mean, just making sure. It didn't really matter what happened. If September 11th didn't happen, they were going to find some way that they were going to go and bomb the civilians in Iraq. And I think about all this. I think of this larger context. And to me, it's very difficult for me to look at the case of Bradley Manning and go, all right, I support that. I just can't.
Peter, and for you, I mean, one of the things that strikes me, and I don't, obviously you have your own sense of what the sort of the global significance of Bradley Manning's case is, but one of the things that just is stunning to me is that the way that the media has virtually blacked out this story. I mean, it is the idea that we have an American who is being charged of aiding the enemy and under the Espionage Act, and there's, I mean, we are sitting amongst what accounts for the two of maybe three or four individuals who accounts for 100%, 80 to 90% of everything we know about this case. It is astonishing. I mean, we're talking, as far as the government's concerned, Aldrich Ames, right? I mean, yet the coverage of this case has been incredibly missing. And I think, to Brigida's point, without one of the reasons why I think it's important that we're here tonight is to build some momentum in the society to shame the media, which I think, frankly, I think the work that Kevin and Alexa have done, frankly, has in many respects shamed the supposed more professional media, I guess. But give me your...
Oh, absolutely. You know, Bradley Manning taught us things about the world, things we needed to know, things that a lot of people didn't want us to know. Kevin and Alexa constitute most of what we know about the trial of Bradley Manning. Why they can do this and someone working in the Washington Bureau of the New York Times or the Washington Post can't do it, it's not a real question. They're choosing not to do this. There are stories that are too big, and the implications are too profound and too grave. So when we puzzle over why there isn't a lot of coverage of Bradley Manning's trial or of the revelations of WikiLeaks, we shouldn't try too hard to think about this. If you listen to that audio smuggled out, because it had to be, of Bradley Manning explaining what he did, and you ask yourself, well, why wasn't that on the nightly news? Why wasn't that all over CNN? Well, you know why. Because if people heard that, it would put the lie to the idea that Bradley Manning was a petty vandal. He hung around with a bunch of hackers. He didn't have any political ideas. There was sort of armchair psychoanalysis about what his motivations were. He was uncomfortable inside the military. He was a loner, a misfit. We can't know the truth about what Bradley Manning's motivations were, because it would be too profound and too grave and too damaging to U.S. interests. That, I think, is the media lesson writ large about what WikiLeaks and what Bradley Manning means. And the fact that two independent journalists go on their own dime to tell the rest of the world about what's going on at the trial of the country's foremost political prisoner, because people from the establishment media won't do it. You know, you don't have to think too hard about this to realize why this is. They're doing extraordinary work, but like any independent journalist, they are pleading to the rest of the media, do it with us, be there with me. Kevin doesn't want to own this story. Alexa doesn't want to be the only reporter producing this kind of work. No journalist wants to work like that. But the rest of the media is sitting on their hands, and there is no rational explanation for it other than the fact that the story is too big, too painful, and too powerful, and we must keep people's eyes and ears away from it.
I know why it wasn't on CNN, because the CNN reporter was right in front of me, and he was snoring during the session.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's why it wasn't
oh,
on
thank
CNN.
You for finally telling me where it was.
Also, I want to give a shout-out to Adam Klasfeld and Nathan Fuller, who have also been at almost every hearing. Nathan has been there every hearing, and Adam has, too. They've also been covering this trial for the public.
Brigida's question as to why the press in this country does not see that they're next on the list, I think, is in some respect, the question is already almost answered, because in some respects, they were ahead on that list, and they have already been sort of consumed. There's, in other words, it's not for a lack of awareness, although I guess the idea of someone sleeping at the pretrial, but it is in some respects, it is because the government has already been effective in chilling the reporting that this situation required.
You know, one of the cables, my favorite example from WikiLeaks was a State Department cable that was about Iran procuring fearsome new weapons that could hit capitals in Europe. That was the cable. The New York Times reported that. They did not publish the cable because the government told them not to. So don't publish that on your website as part of the cables you're publishing. WikiLeaks did publish it. So anyone who read that New York Times story could go read the actual cable. And when you read the cable, you realized there were a lot of doubts about this intelligence. And there was a Russian official saying, we don't think any of this is actually true. None of that was in the New York Times account. And they wouldn't let you see the WikiLeaks cable to make up your own mind. You had to go to WikiLeaks to find it when you could. That, I think, is the threat on a different level to the media, is that WikiLeaks provides a different way of doing journalism. So myself and Gareth Porter and Glenn Greenwald could read this cable and say, the New York Times is totally blowing this story. And that offends them, because they're the people who are professionals. We are supposed to entrust them to have secret sources that they grant anonymity to whisper in their ears all kinds of fearsome things. When the rest of us can see this information and make up our own minds, well, then it raises the question, well, what is the New York Times for then, if we can see this and judge it for ourselves? And that is a threat to the media on an entirely different level and might explain the lack of solidarity, if you will, with the plight of Manning or of WikiLeaks in general.
Brigida, I mean, in that same vein, I mean, this is part of a larger struggle of democratizing this type of information, no? I mean, in the context of WikiLeaks.